Hello, it's Owen Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football. It's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Off The Ball Daily,
a home for your favourite podcasts from Off The Ball.
Andy put it towards me after the fight in Germany. He offered the fight. He said, Paddy, would you like to take the fight? Would you like to take a fight in Croke Park, maybe against Tyrone McKenna? I said, yeah. Andy, let's do it.
Subscribe to the Off The Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
We got a full house for you this morning. Colm, sorry for your trouble.
Thank you, Dara. Appreciate it.
Enda, how are you?
Grant.
Dara, how are you?
Hey, Jar.
We'll make everybody wait to hear what you have to say about Cork, will we?
A lot of sport, to be fair.
Yeah.
To be fair. Anyone stay up?
Can't do it. Can't get up to do this and string two sentences coherently together. And yeah. So the game was delayed for an hour, the England game. So I don't know, at actual time it kicked off. Does anybody know?
I didn't stay up.
England 3-2 winners, a man sent off. The story afterwards of Jordan Henderson's broken arm.
Oh my God.
One of the most horrific injuries you're ever going to see.
I was asking you this morning, yeah. What was the name of the Arsenal player who Tony Adams dropped after the
Steve Morrow.
Final? Steve Morrow, who I don't think was ever the same again.
No. No. Henderson's arm snapped like a twig.
Oh, stop.
Don't watch the slow motion if you're in any way crazy.
It is, you can see horrible. It like it's there. Yeah, I just saw it from like a fan footage point of view of him jumping over the advertising boards. And because Harry Kane afterwards, I know we actually have Harry Kane's interview and the hoarse voice, but he kind of not plays it down at the start, but he's like, oh, he fell, I think he's all right. But then Thomas Tuchel confirmed afterwards it was horrific.
He's had to stay behind, couldn't fly just yet.
Oh, Jesus.
So...
He got buffed as well, did he? Previously.
Yeah, at some point in the match, yeah.
It's such a shame. Like, it felt like he was going to play such an important role in this England team as well.
Ah, no.
That's
poor man's lying there. His corpse barely cold. And you're like, ha, 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 ha.
I'm not laughing.
It's the adjustment. It's the adjustment of the shirt. It's like, I like that old quip of mine. Yeah. Anyway, you should be okay, buddy. Surgery needed. See you later.
You're going to be the butt of my joke today.
He'll be fine.
What?
Grand.
He's got a broken arm. He's not fine.
Bones may heal.
I had a feeling they'd do it. We were talking about this last week about predictions. They're consumed by this altitude discussion.
Right? Well, you see, I do think they had the inside line after seven or eight English journalists decided to run a 5K around the Azteca the day before the game, to just for these professional athletes to realise what it's like to play in those conditions.
Listen, we're in a cynical mood over there in the corner this morning. I thought that Miguel Delaney's video was great.
I love
Irish, by the way.
Pieces, yeah.
I thought it was really good. Just a really good love idea.
Them. Yeah,
just to show it.
Yeah,
and then there was a pylon, of course.
Was there?
Inevitably.
But a social media pylon.
Yeah, social media pylon. I mean, what are you going to do? Like, is it even real if it's social media? You know,
don't stick your picnic blanket down beside the dog shit when you go to the picnic. The park.
Okay, yeah.
Make that up.
No.
It's pretty good. It's pretty profound.
If the English journalists hadn't covered the fact that altitude would play a massive factor in this game, they'd be like, oh, jeez, they went and underestimated this. And
I watched Miguel's video. No greater compliment in this world of content.
Who mentioned Miguel?
Fair play to be able to run the 5K.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he says my usual 5K.
He finished it.
He did, did he? Yeah.
Did he finish it?
Oh, I don't know.
You said you watched it.
No, I can't remember what his updates were.
Oh, okay.
No, do you know why? Because he started editing it after the kilometre. He's like, I'm just going to do this every so often. It's like 2.5.
So you can't verify.
Can't verify, but I watched the duration of it. No, it's a good point you make, actually. But I think he finished it.
I thought it was an interesting thing to decide to do if you were the only person to decide to do it. It was the fact that I saw like 7 or 8 of them.
Either way.
Someone did it first, though, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What a unique perspective this is. Jude Bellingham clearly watched them, though.
Yeah, look,
he was very good.
Very good. Excellent. Anthony Gordon was very good.
Ponce red carded.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, so Thomas Tuchel afterwards, very strong words about the referees. Repeatedly said they're bad, they're not good, these referees. There's three big calls in this game, so there was the two penalties and the red card. I thought all three were fair enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I presume he was talking about other incidents, unless he disagrees with one of the England calls.
Well, the bench emptied, and that's when Henderson got booked, I think, for after the red card. The
red card looks like, on live TV, looks like a really crunching hard tackle.
And it was missed, essentially.
And then you see the replay, and it's brutal, really.
Sorry, Bellingham.
Could have been another broken bone in the match.
Bellingham's clearance when it's still 2-1.
Oh, like amazing. Mexico at the end of that first half. Like you were saying beforehand, they were playing like it was the end of the game.
Mm.
So they have Jordan Pickford's excellent save. Raul Jimenez just hits it wide in an Erling Haaland style shot. And then Bellingham's clearance. Haaland's finished, by the way. That second goal.
Oh,
both goals were very good, but the second one, amazing. Brazil crash out. It's a great night of... slash morning.
Bellingham just had one of those games where he's like, I'm just going to do everything, lads. Don't worry about it.
Yeah.
I'll get us through this game.
Yeah.
He scored a hat-trick, essentially, as good as a hat-trick. That clearance is as good as a goal.
It's definitely... the golden boot is now level, right? Right? Messi, Mbappe, and Haaland are all on 7?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Is Kane up there now?
How do you separate them?
I think he's 6, is he?
Or he's 6.
Maybe he's... How do you separate them?
The goals against Brazil should count more than
this happened a Euros or something, wasn't it? Patrick Schick and Ronaldo were tied and it went back to assists or something.
Oh, did they?
There's something random. Yeah, it was like
something to give it to
really
Ronaldo,
sense.
Presumably.
Yeah, it was Ronaldo won it. Yeah, yeah.
That's today, isn't it? Portugal, Spain.
It's this evening,
yeah.
Brilliant kickoff time of 8 o'clock.
That's great. Perfect.
Oh,
I was looking there at the England Norway game. Do you know what time it kicks off?
2 in the morning.
Saturday night, 10.
Oh, great. That's perfect.
Yeah.
So all the quarterfinals, apart from one, is good.
That's. I think that's been my biggest issue with this World Cup, obviously.
The timing?
It's incredibly difficult because of the time difference in all the different cities across the different three countries.
Mm-hmm.
But it has frustrated me that I haven't been able to set my clock to any of the kickoff times because they've all been different. Like 1 minute, you've got a game on at 8:15, the next one's on at 9:30. And then... Mm-hmm. Maybe we have a midnight game, maybe we have a 2 a.m. game.
Mm.
Just give me set times for these games.
And they don't seem easier to follow. Sense. Like, 12 o'clock in Atlanta, that's no problem, we'll do that.
Yeah, that was the last game in Azteca in this tournament, which, look, Azteca's been brilliant, I'm not going to say otherwise, but if a game's kicking off at 1 a.m, the difficulty with hosting a game at the top of a mountain is you do get these lightning storms and games at 1 a.m, they're doable. Games at 2 a.m, they are not doable. Unless you're, working late in the morning.
Mm. Neymar came off the bench.
He did, yeah.
Scored a penalty.
A bit early, I thought, as well. Give him a good, 20 odd minutes. He came on. I feel like you bring him on, you get a boost from him coming on, and the team gets a lift. But they took the hydration break as soon as he came on.
All right.
So all that momentum that came on with him was just gone.
But he needed a break.
It was nil all, was it, at that stage?
Yeah, it would have been, yeah.
And then it's just after Haaland scores.
The point was made on ITV's commentary that the France 98 game between those two is almost exactly the same as it went. That Norway won 2-1 in that game and the first goal was the 78th minute. There's a minute miss. Now, that was obviously a group game. Brazil got to the final that year.
Neymar retired after the game.
From international football. Yeah. So that annoyed me so much, that penalty. Neilan was excellent to get in his head. Because he knew that Neymar would fall into the trap of making this a duel when it was 2-0 and there was seconds left. So they're talking shit to each other back and forth. And I was thinking if he scores this, he's gonna give it to the
97 and a half minutes into the 99 allotted.
Clown like.
Yeah. I thought he was more focused on giving it to the keeper. Even after he scored,
but
he went over to him.
Excellent by Neilan because he was like, I'm going to get this guy will definitely fall for this.
He had an amazing game. I'd say for who kicked it back, was it Ayer?
Sorry, saved the penalty in the first half as well.
Over his head. He was amazing.
They had a disallowed goal too, Norway to start. I really enjoyed this game. So it's good. So England, Norway, plenty of time to do predictions. What's the gut here?
I'd say they don't really want to face Haaland, do they? They're like...
Yeah, but it's not just Haaland, though.
Has anybody not scored against him? Well, Odegaard nearly gave away goal in the first half, dribbling around his own penalty area.
get a one-on-one chance himself.
Pocket picked.
Oh, then Endrick's one-on-one chance at 0-0 when he just came on the pitch and his touch, awful touch. Jeez, Vinicius is true ball for that.
Outside the boot,
true ball of the tournament.
Endrick looked like an amateur footballer.
Now, yeah, he did add something though. He mixed it up for them. Like, you know, he brought something a little bit different. I thought when Neymar came on, it kind of nullified him because they pushed him out wide and it didn't really seem to suit him. And the Neymar was getting on a lot of ball and he wasn't doing much with it. It's like they were forcing him into the game a bit, but yeah.
All right. Shall we delay the inevitable any further here?
Will we
go for it? Here's the performance rankings.
The good.
Is it acceptable to say it was the performance so far of the World Cup? Maybe not.
The bad.
I'm scratching my head. The performances was just lacked that intensity.
And the amber.
Off the balls. Performance rankings.
Don't make ghosts there, Jar.
What was your favourite meme in the aftermath?
That didn't look.
The Dublin Zoo giving free tickets to Cork. Anybody who shows their train ticket on the day of the All-Ireland final can... Ringman Rangers looking for friendly. Yeah. That one. That was good.
I do actually get plenty of ringman.
Yeah.
That was the thought actually at full time whistle.
What's the feeling?
Repeated heartbreak equals what? Like, you know, because then the adrenaline eventually wears off and that. The only consolation is it's not a final. The furthest to happen in the semi final. I thought that they had gotten their Dublin route from last year over with the round earlier in the Offaly thing and it would focus them more. But let's be honest about this. A lot of the talk going into this match was the Cork-Limerick final, you know. And it's funny because this time last week we were all talking about hurling now being the poor cousin of football. And like hurling's really struggling. And if it wasn't for the Munster Championship, hurling would be in serious bother and you could argue it already is. And then you have this side from the Leinster Championship who haven't won the All-Ireland in 9 years, whose last final, I think, was the year after 2018, which is a repeat of what will be this year's final. Limerick's first in their run. And I suppose they were written off, and we were going into this match. We spoke with Seamus Flanagan about this on Friday, that there is a little bit of the unknown with Galway, because they haven't played much this year. You know, it was a very poor Kilkenny side. They struggled at times against Wicklow. They beat Wexford. They beat Dublin okay. Like, but then you think, is that really adequate preparation heading in to a match against a Munster Titan, if you want to call him that? And they were legitimate questions. And then you watch this match. And the weird thing is they start much better, way, way better than Cork in the first 20 minutes. But then Cork get it back. So Cork go 5 points up.
And cruising.
And at that point, the prevailing feeling in the stadium is this is different now to the Tip final at this point. In that Cork are 6 points up at halftime, obviously, against Tip last year in the final, and there's still a bit of trepidation. It's like, I'm not really mad about how Cork are playing here. But at this point, it was like, I think they'll run away with it. But they got their warning before halftime because Galway pulled it back to a point.
Well,
they got their warning.
When you say they got their warning, you'd also have to acknowledge that they couldn't deal with the specific style of play where there was a massed defence and a single target man, and they didn't know what to do, and they kept making mistakes. So if it was just about a warning, it's purely psychological, which I think it's a factor, definitely psychological frailty in the team is a factor. But tactically, they just didn't make any changes. They didn't respond to what was happening to them.
They tried to do the same thing repeatedly in the second half. And it felt like the thought in the game was gone. And they were going by pure instinct, which was insufficient
half,
against this Galway side.
In the first half, they actually had a short puck out strategy and they were playing the ball.
It was working.
And while it was high wire stuff, the Cork support weren't necessarily loving it.
No,
it was a strategy.
It's a very reactive set of fans in that sense. So there's a lot of groans if there's a slight bit of an error. But there was a moment, and it was 2 minutes into the game, when this short puck around strategy, right, or this short passing even, it was almost like they were bringing Galway onto them, right?
Exactly.
They put it down the flank to Sean O'Donoghue
and
he drops it.
Yeah.
And it's a really basic underage error you'd make. Yeah. And then the groans start after 2 minutes. At that point, I think Galway are 2 or 3 points up, which is meaningless in the grand scheme of things, but Cork don't score for 4.5 minutes in the game. So there's already a bit of, like, not this again.
Can I offer you a piece of evidence the next day? Limerick did almost they had a series of mistakes in the first half.
There was a crossfield pass that went out. Yeah.
And look, obviously, they're a different group. They have countless All-Ireland medals, so they're entitled to it. And they have credit in the bank with the fans. I just think that they had an approach. They had a plan. It was working relatively well. And then whatever happened, they couldn't stick with the plan. And they lorried ball down on a half-back line that was ravenous in the second half. It was pure long poke out. Five or six came back in the space of 5 or 6 minutes and it was game over. And then the red card happens and like I think the red card is largely irrelevant in terms of the outcome.
Yeah, I would disagree that it was irrelevant, but I do think it was a side factor and it shouldn't have been. That should have been the talking point in a game that Cork got out to 14 men. But just like against Tipperary in the final last year, it's an aside of what happened. Yeah. Like, oh, and they also went down to 14. But they were playing like they were 14. There was a guy, there was a Cork fan right in front of me at this match in Croke Park on Saturday, and he was screaming left. It was the Cork left side in the second half was totally left unguarded. So Galway had all the time in the world, and this was when Cork had 15 on the pitch, and it looked like Galway
six
had
6 points in a row came from the exact same
two or three extra men. Another fella says to me, it looks like Cork are playing with 13 in the first 20 minutes. So it was just real curious, like almost literal disappearance in front of you. Then they get it back and they're like, this is the cruelty of the Cork thing. They get it back in midway through the first half. The second quarter, Cork are quite good. But then by the end, like the game, how many points were into it about 20 minutes to go? I think it's about 5 or 6. So that should be a competition. That's nothing in the grand scheme of things these days. The accuracy of these players from distance particularly. I almost felt like it was over then.
It was difficult to see a way back, whereas you always felt like Limerick had a way back into the game. People are giving out about the coaching. I just feel like now taking the year, you know, Ben O'Connor had that stuff about previous Cork teams not working hard enough and then his team doesn't work hard enough.
Hello, it's Eoin Shehan here from Off The Ball, and the FIFA World Cup 2026 is here. And let's be honest, the matchday version of ourselves can look a little committed. Jerseys, face paint, scarves and questionable weather, whatever you have, maybe even a full costume if your team makes a run, you can look a little worse for wear come the end of it all. But the World Cup, it's not just about the football, it's the atmosphere, it's the nights in the pub, it is the watch parties with your mates, and maybe even meeting someone new. That is where Lynx comes in. As an official personal care sponsor of the FIFA World Cup 2026, Lynx's premium fragrances are here to help you smell your best, even in the middle of full matchday madness. Lynx, smell your best when you look your worst. Now, enjoy your podcast.
Like, and he very clearly is like, oh, we're going to get letters during the week from lads, we're going to get phone calls during the week from lads, and that's horrific. It's terrible that they have to put up with that. But it's not a shield when there is legitimate questions to be asked about. The coaching, the preparation, just the whole kind of, we're going to win everything. Do you know?
There's a couple of things that I'm curious about. How much of it is truly psychological purely? And does the focus on that factor actually negate the tactical shortcomings?
So you can't be confident in your plan if your plan is shit. Right?
Well, the plan is, I'm not saying the plan, it'd be incredibly insulting to say the plan is Vibes and the plan is Cork. It's not that, because they can overwhelm a team strategically as well as skillfully. But it feels like when trouble arises, Cork don't like it. And it's actually akin to England football teams at national tournaments, major tournaments, is that you can see the fear in the players in the second half of games that's going against them, that the reaction here is going to be stark. And we can't speak on behalf of these players, but that's what it looks like.
Yeah, you can be really, really good in sport if you can follow a plan and execute that plan down to a T. But when things aren't going well, a great team is able to adapt and play what's in front of them. It feels like that Cork team, in a unique way, just can't really do that. It's so eerily similar to last year. And I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's the group of players. I don't think it's the management. I think, maybe the tactics weren't right, but Galway,
I think they have to take some responsibility, though.
Yeah, well, 100%.
You know, they come in and said everything that came team before this, not good enough. We're here now. We're going to fix everything. You know, it was a ballsy approach.
Yeah. But I think those Cork hurlers are better players than the Galway hurlers. I know that's probably not going to be received very well because they just beat them, but I think player by player, there's probably more pedigree to that team. So there's no reason why they can't just play what's in front of them.
Bring William Buckley on. Bring him on earlier. Bring him on with 20 minutes to go when he was really lively straight away. But Robbie O'Flynn didn't do an awful lot when he came on. There is good players. I do wonder, is it the end for a couple of them? Because the age profile is decent enough. It's not an ageing side by any means.
Will we hear from
it's killer. Yeah,
the
yeah,
Cork go ahead,
yeah.
We were, there was coverage of the GAA across off the ball across the weekend from Tommy Rooney and Rachel Sheehan and James Cahill and
the Hurling Pod.
Everyone that we could get down to Croke Park was in Croke Park over the weekend. And here was Ben O'Connor speaking to the press after the game and sort of alluding to some of the things we're speaking about here. I don't think Cork saw this coming.
Didn't see it coming, tell you the truth. But it is what it is. They were better than us on the day. Outworked us, outheld us. No excuses.
Kind of
make
the most of the fight. I suppose the fight is before half time. Were crucial
in points.
I think
Galway
got 5 of the last 6
to
12 from 5 to 1.
Would
we seem
very
confident going
into half time? I won't say confident, but I thought they had a few points before half time, killed the skin with no cushion at that stage. Did they get the first 2 or 3 as well straight away then after half time? It was an area that cost us, as you said, the same as the most violent area that cost us in today. But look, once they got on top of us, we had no comeback from Cindy off, they made it. They're on impossible. Look, that's not a true reflection of our lads. For everyone watching today, it is, people are saying, oh, Cork again, we're better than that, but we just didn't do it today.
Galway scores, but half-time killed us, and Cork are a point up. That's the scary thing about it. And the difference in fan sentiment to Croke Park, because it's funny, it's undeniably comparable to last year's All-Ireland final. Cork are 6 points up at half-time against Tipperary, and there's a bit of fear in the concourse at half time, because I don't like the look of this. Half time this time, a point ahead, a lot more confident. And they'll get that together because we had seen them getting their act together 20 minutes earlier.
Just looking back to Patrick Horgan's column in the Examiner, after the game, Ben O'Connor said Cork had been known down through the years as having nice players who didn't work hard and he would only play lads who'd work hard. I don't know if I'd agree with Ben there, because it suggests previous management teams put up with fellas who didn't try. That his current players are trying hard now but didn't in the past. This struck me as odd, given that most of the team he has now have won Munster finals, league finals, and reached 2 All-Ireland finals, and you don't get to that level without trying hard. So that was from May. So I just think, look, that first year has been a very steep learning curve for him as manager. He's come through that underage system and had great success with them, but I think next year you can't be having Alan Connolly saying the stuff that he said. It just makes a rod for people's backs.
Is that where you go?
All of it matters. All of it matters.
Is that where you go with this?
What did Galway say this year? Nothing.
That's because people weren't asking Galway about these. They weren't asking these questions of Galway because they weren't a contender.
So you just go, look.
But Cork were a contender.
Next game.
Jeez, I wouldn't go to the Alan Connolly comments.
I think it's all part of it. I think everything feeds into the... All meme jokes aside, Cork fans were planning for Limerick, and Cork fans were thinking about Limerick, and I'm sure the team didn't allow that to happen, and I'm sure they've got, you know, great performance people helping them to focus on the next ball, but it didn't work.
I don't know, those comments, is that he's only saying what people are thinking, and I know it's very kind of Irish to be like, it didn't work out for you, and I'm going to go back to that comment you said about us wanting to win. Like, if that had worked this year, would you be saying that helped?
When's the last time it worked?
What's for anyone?
I distinctly remember you saying you liked this when it came up.
Well, it turns out they need a strategy here, and their strategy hasn't worked. I enjoyed it as someone who isn't a Cork fan.
Yeah.
But sorry, Alan Connolly didn't interrupt the interviewer to say, I want to say this. Like, he's asked about the year ahead, right? Of course, it is the objective. Cork won the league in Munster last year and it came up short in the final. So how do you improve on that? You go one further. That means winning everything.
And say you're sitting down with them now in November and you're sketching out the year and you're having a word with everybody about the messages that they're sending to the fans.
He won't say the same thing next year. I'm not saying he'll repeat. I'm not saying anyone will. Because there's more humility this year for Cork to deal with next year, because Cork didn't win anything. And they lost the round earlier. But I, like, Jesus, that when I'm doing the post-mortem here, or anyone is, that's not the first thing I'm going to.
But we could fixate on the trains as well. Do you know what I mean? It's like this
that was bollocks.
But it's all a part of everything. Is it bollocks?
I don't know. Look, sorry, in my opinion, it's fair enough if you think it was really legitimate, grand. But like,
is there not a counting chickens?
There's no proof that
is there not
anything to do with what
there's
happened.
No proof that anything has anything to do with anything.
Yeah, I know, that's fair enough, but that's your opinion. Yeah. That's what I would say was like, I'd be way more worried what happened on the pitch.
Well, they all feed into each other. There's a complacency.
Yeah, it's all in hindsight. So,
you don't think there was a complacency in the way that the team was prepared to go against. So Galway didn't do anything new. Galway isolated their target man and played with a one-man forward line, 13 men behind the ball, absolutely savage work rate and intensity, and they need to be really incredible from distance. Otherwise, having a single man full forward line backfires against
you. I don't know. I didn't see Cork, I didn't see complacency, but I saw Cork not showing up. I saw, if anything, it was more battling than complacency. It was more fear about the occasion. Like, did Limerick, or Limerick complacent against Clare for the first 10 minutes?
A bunch of wides.
Did a bunch of missed passes as well. Did a bunch of drop balls. So they played badly versus Cork's complacency. That
Cork
just feeds into the Cork narrative.
For a one-man full forward line. They couldn't play against a sweeper. Like, they couldn't play against a sweeper in the All-Ireland final last year.
I know, but you were just using different generalisations about, well, it's Cork, so they last, so therefore it must be an arrogant thing and a complacency thing because of the way they played. If Limerick play badly, it's like, oh, Limerick started poorly there. But they'll get their act together.
But Limerick did get their act together.
They adapted.
Limerick did get their act together, did make changes, did use their bench properly, have a team that has a management team that is storied.
What happened with Cork in the match in midway through the first half? They did get their act together, right? So they also responded by Limerick. I'd have far more worries about what happened after that. That's the worry. The second half is incredibly worrying. I would put complacency way down the list. And who knows, by the way? Well, maybe they were complacent. Maybe they were thinking about a final against Limerick, right? But I'd be way more worried about the fact that they just gradually, minute by minute in the second half, started disappearing, going within themselves. The exact opposite of what everyone claims Cork people to be.
All right.
It happened twice in a row.
All right, Donal and Joe. Colm and Jer. We'll move on because we do want to talk about the winning dressing room as well. Galway. Micheál O'Donoghue speaking in the press afterwards as well. Let's hear a little bit of that.
I suppose after the Leinster final with the 4 weeks, we just had a good regroup and just gave us the time to settle, and then we had a really productive 2 week build up into it, you know, similar to all our other games, and the lads were just really good and really honest, so it was really encouraging from our point of view. And I think after the Leinster final you could see the confidence growing in the younger fellas, and I think they transfer that now into another good performance today.
You could probably call the opening half a half of two halves. You ever started ever so well, then they hit back. But crucially, though, those points in first half injury time to leave the minimum between the sides at half time were probably key.
Yeah, it was. And look, I suppose we had huge emphasis on getting a good start for ourselves, just to put ourselves in the game and put our own stamp on it. And look, obviously, with the height of respect for Cork, and they showed that in the second quarter, they came back into it, and as you said, the few points before half time just kept us right there, which was really important.
The second half, though, that blistering 8 minutes or so was quite incredible. Was it even beyond your wildest dreams just how good that spell went?
I know. Look, I think throughout the league and throughout the championship, as the team has evolved and as they've gotten more comfortable with what we want to do, you know, we've had some really good second half performances, and you know, we knew that if we were in the position we were in going into the second half, that we were well capable of pushing on again, and thankfully we did.
We haven't done enough on Galway.
No, it's
Galway
true.
Were awesome. Amazing. Like every single touch they had in that first half went to hand.
Rabbit up front caused
skill level was off the charts.
So much trouble for Cork. He didn't even get much of the ball in the second half, and he still caused a lot of problems.
There's is it on Red Zone where they do an angry run of the day? He runs angry. Everything's flailing.
Haaland style, just violent running. Yeah,
it's amazing. It's incredible to watch, and it's great that he's so young. And I'm really glad that they don't play hurling in Australia. That we're not going to have another Kobe situation, but.
We'll be chatting Galway after 9 o'clock.
So a help party for them.
Hell of a job, Micheál O'Donoghue too, because he was there the last time they were there, actually, in the final. He was manager as well.
I enjoyed his celebration after the goal went in at the end.
Didn't
it was
see
like he finally just
He let rip.
Released, he let rip. Yeah. He decided the game was done.
Two of the easier cutters were given the performance rankings, I think. A red of Cork and a green of Galway.
No debate there, yeah.
I could argue that the one out-and-out green in terms of performances from the four teams in the semi-final was Galway, because Limerick Clare was a back-and-forther and an absolute sickener for Clare. I mean, you asked me how I felt this morning. Spare thought for Clare supporters, because the 70th minute in that goal for Limerick, and you're watching it on TV in this instance for me anyway, and it's preventable because there's a commitment to try and catch the ball and intercept, and if you just hang tight a bit, Limerick might not score that decisive goal, but as soon as the ball is caught, it felt inevitable. That was cruel. But then again, look, Clare didn't score after their penalty in the, what was that, 57th minute? Then they got 1-3 in the second half.
Yeah,
like Cork had 5 points in the second half. Clare get 1-3, and I think one of those 1-3 is from open play.
Yeah. It wasn't a, I don't think it was a capitulation in any way. I think it was just more Limerick had figured them out a bit. But there was a stretch of 10-15 minutes there where Clare barely touched the ball. Like, Garrode started to take over the puck out. Like, and it felt like there wasn't a clean ball caught all day, and then Garrode caught maybe three or four.
Six in a row, yeah.
Like,
I don't know, it felt like it,
yeah. And
we're really struggling here. What are we going to do? Ping him. Hit him.
Yeah, and but that's the impact on Nicky Quaid, though, as well. Like, that black card decision should have been a black card. That would have changed the game. And if I was a Clare fan, I would feel pretty aggrieved by it.
Could,
particularly the way the game played out.
Did it balance itself out? Could Clare have had a second yellow for their fullback?
Yeah.
Like, in the same way that Rabbit the day before was causing wreck for Callahan, that there was actually a yellow was given, a second yellow should have been given. Clare made the substitution after that. It felt like, here, listen, if you don't get him off now, I'm going to send him off. That's not really the rules. So that there was some kind of... Tony Kelly got booked in the first half. Couldn't quite see what it was, but people at home were saying...
He bumped into Grode after scoring a point. It felt a bit harsh.
Had he been throttled himself? Did someone have him around the neck?
He bumped into Grode, and Grode kind of grabbed him after he bumped him. It was a scuffle, like, and there wasn't much in it. I don't think that was necessary. I think Grode went over, or maybe I shouldn't say that, but so someone went over to the linesman and complained about it, and the linesman reacted, told the referee, and then he got a yellow card for it.
I did feel Kelly was very upset with the referee, yeah, or the linesman for giving it, but look, I still think the two wrongs don't make a right, but maybe Conor Cleary could have been sent off, and that would also have changed the texture of the game.
Maybe.
Adam English comes in for Keane Lynch, doesn't start, late withdrawal from a hamstring issue, but he comes on, and it's his catch is the start of that move for the decisive goal. What a player to bring
it's
on.
It's a ridiculous catch. Like, he gets his jump wrong almost, because he catches it out here. It is ludicrous.
For that Aiden O'Connor
goal. It felt like he came on very late.
58, I think.
Yeah, I guess that's all very he could late. Do. Maybe that's how bad the injury was. Yeah. But it's a heartbreak for all the Clare players, and particularly Shane O'Donnell, because that's it for him now. And afterwards, he was in tears. I don't know if he saw that on TV. Yeah. He was talking about it, and it was actually like genuinely moving watching him, because he was really trying to hold back. And he had the two arms and the shoulders from each side. Trying to console him, I suppose. He had an amazing point in the first half. The swivel and the skill and the touch and the accuracy, and it was like a lovely encapsulation of his career. But he was quiet in the second half, and so were a few of the Clare forwards.
They missed. They had a lot of bad wides.
Yeah. Limerick had 15 wides.
Yeah.
So like another day, Limerick, I wouldn't say they would have run away with it, because I think Clare had similar number wides as well. So it was a very flawed game, but it made it all the more enticing.
That was a proper contest. Like,
Limerick do that though. They do have like a, you know, they beat you by volume shooting.
Yeah.
Which is kind of what Galway were doing the previous day.
There was quite a big call in this game as well, lads. And James Cahill was on live on radio for Off the Ball when it all kicked off. Here's how he saw it.
What card is he going for? I don't know. Peter Duggan seems to be remonstrated with the linesman here, so he may not be given a black card if the Clare boys have got wind that it's not a black. And McQuaid's going back to goals. Wow. Wow, it's a yellow card for Nicky Quaid. And Peter Duggan, geez, if Peter Duggan was playing football, the penalty might have been reversed there, because, oh, I don't know how they have allowed that to happen. Yeah, maybe I've got it wrong there, James. Does Peter Duggan have to be in control of the ball for it to be a black card?
No, because Peter Duggan had the angle to get around Nicky Quaid. It was just him and the goal. It was a clear cut goal opportunity. Quaid takes him down. It's a black card all day long. And I love Nicky Quaid, so there's no bias here. Black card all day long. That's a huge decision. That's a decision that has a massive effect on the game. Tony Kelly has got to secure this. If he doesn't secure this, I'm telling you now, Limerick win the game.
And they did anyway. Good penalty.
Yeah, amazing. Yeah. Amazing.
It was, yeah.
Against
yeah.
the greatest goalkeeper of all time, yeah. you know?
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah. He had the yeah. chance.
Sort of reminded me of Harry Kane's penalty last night as well, where he just like literally just blasts it. And
yeah, he could tell him where he was going to put it and it would make no difference to the goalkeeper. But the ball went in the net as well.
Yeah.
And
in
this goal.
Moment, like, it was a Barry Nash, was it?
Barry Nash kicked it in, yeah.
He shinned it in, but I don't know if he thought it was the play had stopped and he just kicked it away. But that was your sliding doors moment in the match. It always felt to me that Limerick were going to do it. In a way that in the previous match it wasn't that case, because that penalty puts them 6 points clear. Puts Clare 6 points ahead.
Yeah. And Nicky Quaid gives everyone a heart attack right at the very end when Peter Duggan has a swipe from about 25-30 yards yeah. out, drops the ball and's rolling towards the line. That would have been, you know, like a ball doesn't lie moment where a refereeing decision doesn't go your way and the game corrects it to an extent. That would have been the greatest ball doesn't lie moment of all time. Had Nicky Quaid dropped that ball over the line. Oh.
Go back to last Thursday on the show, Sarah Donovan saying there's a trust issue with yeah. Cork. I've never not trusted Limerick. Even when they lose, I believe they'll be back. Yeah. You know, I never questioned them at all. And and it's their first final in 3 years, which is amazing, because if they lost this game, you know, you'd be talking one of the greatest teams of all time.
Over.
Would have gone 4 years without. It was that's how tantalizing this was to go either way. But you'd be sickened for Clare. Absolutely sickened.
Is it not for Clare? Is it not similar vibes to Cork? I know. Look, Cork have a different idea and mentality going into the game, and the narrative's a little bit different. But it's essentially the same thing that happens Clare here. They didn't. Was it the 56th-ish minute?
56, 57.
The last time they scored.
Yeah,
they were they're not favourites, though.
Massive underdogs.
Yeah, yeah.
But at the same time, they're 6 points clear.
No, but they are. You're right.
They have a second half.
They are
collapse.
6 points clear.
Is not the same kind of conversation. What happened, Clare? Yeah. What happened there, mentality?
No, they should have brought it home and they didn't. That's true. But it's probably even though it's, you could argue it on the scoreboard, it just doesn't feel the same.
Yeah, no one, like, lads, let's be honest, no one should beat Limerick in a game of hurling. There's none of that. Like, Cork should beat Galway. Mm-hmm. Clare shouldn't beat Limerick. They put themselves in a position that it was quite likely that they would beat them. Whether it's 6 points ahead, 7 points at one point.
You see, you can never put, if a team makes the final of an All-Ireland, you're never putting them in anything else other than green. But for Limerick, there is a tinge of amber to the performance, like, because Clare got at them. And for Clare, it would be the same colour, actually. Yeah. Around the same type of amber.
There is no recent record apart from the penalty shootout of Limerick losing a final. You know, after that, immediately after both games, I was like, geez, Galway have a great chance now after that performance. And then you cool down, you're like, oh, Limerick, they're like the undead.
But you just don't see Limerick, doing what Galway's opponents did in the second half, you know? You just don't see that happening.
No, I see them putting in a much better performance. Yeah. Like, at halftime, none of the superstars of the Limerick team had played well. And in the second half, Hegarty is like, you know, if they take him off at 5 minutes gone, or if he hadn't come back out for the second half, you're like, look, they've just made these changes. Galan comes off. And sorry, the other big thing is Kiley turning around to the crowd.
Yeah, after
that was right in front of us.
Yeah, after Declan Burns put from 7 yards out. Yeah. Darren Burns. Yeah.
I hadn't seen that before. Mm. I hadn't seen it. So he said
afterwards. What did he do for people who missed it? Just
lift. Come on, lifting the crowd.
And it worked. It worked as well.
It partially worked.
Oh, it was so loud! It was so loud in that moment. Like,
it was an important part of the brilliant. Game.
The Dermot Burns one was louder. Because my 10-year-old turns to me and goes, what's the big deal? What's so special about him scoring? I'm like, well, it's Dermot Burns. He's like, no. But it was this kind of feverish. And they were still 3 points down. Like, what's going on? And then, so I thought there was a nervousness at that point from them. You know, like the heavyweight climbing up off the canvas. You're not quite sure there's one more point's going to put him down.
Yeah. It was exactly that, yeah.
He knew what he was doing as well, did John Kiley. And he spoke to Tommy Rooney after the game and said exactly that.
John, 65 minutes on the clock, Dermot Burns nails a free and there's 3 points left. The camera catches you turning to the Hogan stand and trying to hype the crowd up. Did you think you needed a little bit of that in the last few minutes?
I just felt the crowd were just our own, like all that section behind me is all Limerick. And they were so, and it happened below in Cork again, the same thing. They were so wrapped in the game, they forgot to do their job. They switched off. And we needed them to do their job, like, you know? There's 15,000 of them behind me. Like, you know, do your job. Support the team. And when I turned around, they recognised that opportunity. And of course, straight away, there was a reaction. So I've got to know when those moments come, Tommy. Like, no point in I going home saying, fuck it, the crowd are very quiet today, you know? what the hell was wrong with them? They were engrossed. They were so engrossed, like I'm sure you were in the game, enthralled with what was happening in front of our eyes. But you've got to be present in that moment and understand you have a job to do. You have something to do. You can contribute. And they had a massive contribution to us in that last 7 or 8 minutes, because not only had I 8 defending our half of the pitch, I had another 15,000 of them holding them to account beside them and shouting on every block, every hook, every catch. And we needed them to do that. And they did a brilliant job on it, by the way. But they did need to wake up.
I think Micheál Donoghue got a similar reaction from the Galway crowd yesterday. It's going to be a hell of an All-Ireland final. What were the thoughts watching that semi-final yesterday?
I didn't watch it, Tommy. I walked my 2 dogs and left them at it. Because, look, we had our day here today and they had their day there yesterday. You go home and you find out it's over and the result. And you move on and that's it.
Do your job and walk in the dogs. You sound like Roy Keane there, John.
Sorry?
I said, you sound more and more like Roy Keane there. Do your job and walk in the dogs.
Certainly not. But look, you know, you have to let them at it. You can't be wrapped up in 2 games in 24 hours like that. And the way I am, look, you know the way I am, right? I get wrapped up in every game. If it's only bloody 7 aside a training, I'm going to get wrapped up. So, you know, leave them at their job. We stick to our job. We needed all our energy outside there today and all our focus and attention to that game. Because no matter what happened last night, we had to come here today and do our job. And you can see how hard that job was.
Geez, that's great, isn't it? Bloody hell. John Kiely in charge of 60,000 people.
That's pretty amazing. I hadn't actually seen that clip.
Yeah, same. I forgot about one of the biggest swings in this game. Enda there talking about, like, is this a mini Cork, what happened to Clare? Mark Rogers has an easy free, bang on the hour mark.
And then
an easy
right.
free.
Off.
Yeah, and that's a 2-point swing.
They took him off straight away.
Because Aidan O'Connor goes down the other, and Aidan O'Connor had an unbelievable second half particularly. And just little things like that, like that's 3 minutes after they scored a penalty, and that's the last score, as we know. So just the small things. Tony Kelly had a half chance for a goal as well, just after that.
Mm.
So they didn't disappear completely either, Claire.
No. Like, we were sitting in the same row in the Hogan stand, and I actually didn't realise how many Limerick fans are sitting around us until that Kylie moment. Like, that. He's actually spot on. Like, sometimes you hear those things, you're like, you're probably exaggerating a little bit. He was spot on, because up until that point, the Limerick fans weren't standing up, they weren't making that much noise, and all of a sudden they were turning around, picking out lads up from the upper deck, like it was, they'd taken over that stand. And I noticed over in the Cusick as well, they were very animated throughout the whole game, as were the Clare fans. But there was a stark difference between the two stands for whatever reason, but yeah, it was after that 55th minute,
yep,
they just took over Croke Park.
Alright, we move on to Ireland, Nations Championship against Australia. What a game, 33-31 for Ireland.
Yeah, brilliant.
It went 1-0 Australia, 1-1, 2-1 Australia, 2-1, 3-2 Australia, 3-3 Australia, 4-2 Australia, wasn't it?
3-0 Australia nearly, yeah. They were up 12 points, 24-12 at one point. And yeah, that was right at the end of the first half.
Yeah. We had the ball.
Ireland never scrummed deep in their own half, yeah. And I was watching it with my girlfriend, and I said to her, kick it out here and go again second half. And they played and they went down the other end. And they had this lovely play. Prendergast hits a pot of two and Ringrose is out the back of it. It was kind of an interesting looking play. And he just fixes his man, puts Conan in, and then Conan, lovely offload to Gibson Park, and that changes the game completely. He goes under the posts, and it's
hint of a forward pass, but sure. A
little bit, but I thought there was a couple of forward passes in that game, to be honest. Ryan Lonergan's try off the intercept, where it was the offload over the top, and McCluskey looked forward as well, but I was kind of okay with it not being called, do you know, one of those. But then they go into halftime, it's 24-19, you're thinking, right, the complexion of this game is very different. And yeah, it was a proper test match. Like, I know it's an opening weekend and people might not be convinced just yet of this competition and how important it is, but it was a cracking day of fixtures and Ireland obviously got the win in the end. Loved the call from Ben Donaldson at the end to take the 3 points there.
Did Wilson nudge him to that? It looked like he called it. It looked like there was a meeting and Donaldson said, I want it.
Yeah.
And Wilson nodded at him.
I got the vibe that he took it on himself, that he thought he
felt like there was like a question being asked of him, do you want it, as opposed to...
I thought he looked proactive. He got the distance for sure.
I love the call. But yeah, he got it wrong in the end. But
the Dan Sheehan disallowed try... in the second half. That was the one that was called back for obstruction.
Yes. James Ryan. Yeah. Was that fair enough? 100%. Yeah. His truck and trailer. He breaks from the ball, he just takes the defender out.
I'll ask Quinny about that in a few minutes' time. He's on commentary on TV for that. I think he says he's not getting there, but I guess that's not the principle of the point. It
doesn't matter. Yeah, it doesn't matter.
When he saw the scoreline, I thought Ireland are a better team than Australia. Like, it'd be a bigger margin.
There's a lot of negativity going around about this result, and I'm not having it whatsoever. Like, this, I know people will say they've won one of their last nine, but international rugby doesn't work like that. There's long gaps in between games, and players are coming back from injury, and players are getting debuts and stuff. They're different teams, and that was a proper game away from home in the first game of a new competition where players are just off the back of a really, really long season. We're missing a bunch of players. We're missing our captain. We're missing some of our best players, missing two loose heads. And they go out there, they go 12 points down, fight back the way they did. I think it's an amazing result. Look, Australia aren't at their best right now, but they're still a proper team. And yeah, it's a good way to kick off the championship. And you'd hope there's a lot of set piece issues for sure, and the line out was a concern. But you'd hope now with a training week ahead, Japan game next Saturday, that you're able to iron that out over the next week and a half for New Zealand in Eden Park. So I'm not too concerned about anything.
I was waiting for the analysis to, if Ireland lost, for Jack Nee and Albert to get the blame for it.
there is some teeth and issues there though. Like, you could see it in the first half. We were leggy and some players were shooting out of the line. James Ryan was coming out of the line a lot, and the players were getting disconnected and stuff. Their gaps were appearing everywhere. That's a concern.
The pace out wide was coming with Robert Balakoon away.
Yeah, that was a big loss before.
Jimmy O'Brien. O'Brien and Osborne, it's not the paciest flanks.
No, it's not like for like whatsoever. And Jimmy O'Brien's a left footer on the right wing. It's not an ideal situation. I was saying that before the game, that if Balakoon does go down at some point during this competition, we've no right winger to come in for him. I thought Jimmy did pretty well, in fairness to him. He's a good ball player, so he can do that job, like the Matt Hansen job of coming in off the wing and getting involved. But yeah, I'd be worried about the injuries a little bit, but overall I think it was
what colour do you want to give this
result? That's a green. Going away from home, you're it's a comeback win. It's a green.
Just going to bundle the World Cup in with like Pico Lopez Friday night. Great efforts by Caper. They won't want to hear that, of course, if they lose 3-2 narrowly to Argentina.
Say the British papers are talking about Borthwick being on very, very thin ice.
That's
smashed. Hammered 45-21.
That's a really good Springboks team, but yeah, they got smashed.
Do you want to will we give a colour for the update of how you feel about the World Cup this morning? What colour are we giving it at the moment?
Is it not green? Is that?
I think it's green. Yeah. I mean, I think it's green. You didn't think the Brazil Norway game was up for much, but I thought
it was poor for the vast majority of it.
Brazil going out of a World Cup, drama,
big story.
Yeah,
good goals, terrible game.
Erling Haaland scoring his 7th goal.
It's a terrible game.
I thought there was half those really interesting talking points in this game. All right.
I do think we're going to see cagier games as the tournament goes on. We have seen that VAR is getting involved a little bit more as well as the tension grows. President Trump is deciding he can decide who and who is not banned for games. We are starting to see the less fun side of international football here over the last couple of days. But look, the Cape Verde Argentina game was fantastic. A lot of drama in that. England game, a lot of drama in that. Full of drama. Whether or not all of it is enjoyable, I'd have my questions.
What color are you feeling for the World Cup this morning, right now?
Today I feel amber.
Amber? Really? Like, that was a great weekend.
It's a game of opinion, isn't it?
Like, Cape Verde bringing Argentina to extra time is ludicrous. That should not happen. Yeah,
great goal too.
And a great goal as well.
The celebration, running into the crowd, looking for a family member.
He couldn't believe he scored it. And no one else could believe he scored it.
I'm with you. I'm a green World Cup guy.
I debate that.
Three greens and an amber for the World Cup. I guess we'll settle on green with democracy and all that.
You saying green, Jar?
Yeah. Just very one last shout from the performance rankings today, unless I'm missing anything else. Just the Wimbledon women's draw was decimated there over the weekend, in case you missed it. Aryna Sabalenka is gone. The two finalists from last year are gone, and Amanda Anisimova, who lost 6-love in last year's final, she's gone. But so is her conqueror from last year's final, Iga Swiatek. So the women's draw once again is bang wide open. There hasn't been a consecutive champion at Wimbledon in the women's side since Serena Williams in 2016. It's been a different champion every year since.
Wow.
They pulled out of the doubles.
She was injured, yeah. the end of the first set against Maya Joint in her first round defeat.
Picked up something, yeah.
Picked up something, and there's a lot of talk about that anyway. But I would put that in amber because it's a great shock factor for tennis fans, but it's not great for the women's game. They need a rivalry at the top of the game. They don't have it.
Tour de France is back.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing to report on the Irish side of things just yet, but
Pogacar in...
And Isaac Del Toro, 1-2. They're at stage two, yeah. Yeah, they're a force to be reckoned with now.
Sorry, Padraig Harrington.
Yeah.
Once again, Windsor. He loves a back-to-back victory and triumph. Four-shot win at the US Senior Open. Too good for the seniors.
Ian Poulter was... that was his debut at the US Seniors Open. Mm. He's doing that now because... obviously, needs an escape route from Liv. Mm. They all need an escape route from Liv. But they're off calm about what's going on. Of course, they are.
Phil Mickelson's people have responded to that article, by the way. They're going to challenge it.
Ooh.
There's going to be...
they're challenging it. I don't know to what level now, but yeah, they're challenging it.
You would, wouldn't you?
Yeah, some of it is reportedly untrue, according to them.
Okay. Do we know which bits they're...
No, I don't. It's some bits, because I think he has admitted to some of it as well.
Yeah.
Already, which is in the article, which is well worth reading. That's it. Did your performance rankings?
Harrington earned 800,000.
Oh, nice.
Okay.
Sinead?